Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm not positive. We'll have to see how time goes. I would like to have a chance to do a bit of the further liberty or further illumination after the sermon today. So I invite you to think about these two questions. What do you claim from Anabaptism, and what might you correct? Or just any other thoughts, phrases, or questions that come to you from this morning. And there's plenty of space in the bulletin, so you can doodle those to keep track of them. After the sermon, if it looks like there's time, we'll have a chance to call those out and hear from one another. So. I have a little bit of a cold creeping in, so my voice doesn't quite sound like my own, but I think it'll get me through. So as I've been pondering this moment of looking back on 500 years of this particular Christian experiment called Anabaptism, and also looking forward from our vantage point as Generation 20, if you count one generation every 25 years for 500 years, we're kind of Generation 20 of Anabaptism, you could say. A personal memory came to mind that's been helpful to me. Well, I don't know whether it's been helpful to me, but it's certainly been on my mind as I've been thinking through these things, and so I'm bringing it to you all as well. I shared this memory once, but it was like 7 years ago, so I think I can trot it out again. For this memory to make sense to you, I'm just going to give a little bit of background. My maternal grandfather, who some of you may know who he was, the name George R. Brunk II, to a certain generation of folks, is a recognizable name, was a well-known figure in the North American Mennonite Church, particularly 50s, 60s, 70s, I would say. He wasn't from Lancaster, but because he was a tent evangelist, he would visit Lancaster, putting up massive tents and holding week-long revivals called crusades. Yeah. He thought Mennonites needed revival and specifically needed to get acquainted with the Holy Spirit portion of that Trinity. He was a staunch conservative voice in this denomination, and I shouldn't even say it actually led him out of the denomination, but as we know, Mennonites have many little denominations that sort of together make up this tradition, but and also was a strong believer in sort of bringing fundamentalist theology and into Mennonite thought and practice. So for the purposes of this memory, you should know that by the time I started studying theology in college and then went on to seminary soon after, I was not very conservative or fundamentalist in my leanings, which I'm guessing he could sense. Although I wasn't terribly brave about sharing my thoughts with him, I will say. But also, for the purposes of telling this memory, you should know that he had a pilot's license to fly small aircraft, partly because he traveled over the country a lot. So for example, when I was a teenager here in Lancaster, the way Pappy, as we called him, would let us know he was in town would be by flying over the house. And we'd know to drive out to the Smoketown Airport to meet him. So, subtle is not an adjective I've ever used her to describe my grandfather. So that's the background that you need. So cut to March of 2017. I was in the middle of conversations with our conference, Atlantic Coast Conference, of MCUSA, the conference that we belong to here at CMCL and that holds my credentials as pastor, because I had, with the preemptive support of everyone here, officiated a wedding between two women. And at that time, we didn't know for sure how ACC would respond, but it was not a foregone conclusion that it would be supported or what the response would be. I and others from CMCL were participating in conversations about this. So I was driving out Old Philadelphia Pike to the old ACC offices at Locust Grove, where I would be responding to some of these questions about what I had done and why. And just so you know, I wasn't alone. Pastoral team, was with me. It's just the way the polity works. The question kind of came down to a credential question, even though it was a decision we made as a congregation. So that's why I'm describing it that way. So as I was driving down Old Philadelphia Pike and I got close to the office, in my little black bumper Toyota Matrix, which I think is kind of funny, a Cessna airplane flew overhead because we're not very far from the Smoketown Airport there. And I immediately thought of Pappy. Was his spirit doing a flyby, as in the old days, letting me know he was in town on this momentous day? So, if he was letting me know that he was witnessing from the great cloud, I don't imagine he was there to cheer me on, but more likely to try to warn me to cease and desist. Because on paper, our interpretations of Christianity and Anabaptism were very different. If the two of us had sat down with the Schleitheim confession that Verna reminded us of and kind of walked us through 2 weeks ago, or the confession of faith in a Mennonite perspective from the late 90s, we would probably have agreed with many of the articles, but if you had asked us to explain them or describe how they got lived out in practice, or what they said about our understanding of God, or how we would invoke scripture to support our understandings, I'm hard-pressed to think of any article we would have described the same. But I think we would both have been able to paint a picture of who we imagined the early Anabaptists to be, and how our interpretations of that faith were in alignment with them. And for certain, we would both have been able to describe how the person of Jesus Christ, as we understood him, and his teachings, and his life, were what we were striving to be faithful to, and what I felt we were living out in the reason that I was at that meeting. And he certainly felt very strongly about his beliefs lining up with the right faith as well. Although it didn't always seem like it in the rhetoric around this issue for our denomination, I was in that meeting because for me, I was being faithful to my tradition as it had shaped me, not despite it, even if it was a new way of interpreting it to many, like my grandfather. His beliefs largely remained connected to the world that he was formed in. But he quite literally changed the world of Mennonites, so that by the time his granddaughter came on the scene, I was needing to discern how I understood truth and faith in a world partly shaped by him. Again, I think he didn't do it himself, but he was part of a movement that really brought more fundamentalist thinking into Mennonite theology. In my observation, it's hard and rare that a human being who is passionately and successfully involved in a correction to the system they're a part of, that person can go on to comprehend, much less tolerate, much less embrace the system's eventual correction to their correction. Did that make sense? I mean, in some ways, it makes sense to me. The individual will never stop having been formed by their particular experience of the system of which they're a part, and the experience of it when they were being formed. So the correction that they offer to that system will always make sense and feel needful to them, I think. Whereas the subsequent generations will never know the world before the corrections of the previous generation. So it's just a very different vantage point to be thinking about why do we believe this right now and where did it come from? Because we can be empathetic and as understanding as we want to be, but we are formed by the world that we grew up in, and that's the lens through which we sort of discern about beliefs and traditions. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that on paper, our Anabaptist similarities, mine and my grandfather's, weren't that similar. But I think we very much shared a passion for that kind of correction. And that this is one of the things that we also share with our Anabaptist forebears. This shared conviction that as believers, we can and should have a say in what faithful belief and life looks like. That it won't be dictated by a pope or by a 1,500-year-old tradition or by an army or an inquisitor, if the church we're participating in goes off the rails in some way, we will protest or maybe walk away. We'll choose faithfulness to God as we understand it over loyalty to an institution. This is part of our tradition's DNA. And this willingness to walk away has been a hallmark, for good or ill, of at least Mennonite Anabaptists for all these centuries. We'll walk away for what can seem at a critical distance anyway as very trivial matters. It was just an interesting discussion about some local Mennonite, locas in Pennsylvania Mennonite churches where they're literally beside each other, but one is the frame church and the other is the brick church because brick was worldly and some people stayed in the wood frame church, or I don't know. This is third hand. I mean, but yes, we will walk away. In the past, that's usually meant starting a new Mennonite church, but now it can also just mean walking away from church at all. With our strong tradition of honoring the notion that in all things our yes be yes and our no be no, thinking about what we say and not making promises lightly or not wanting to fail to keep our word, it can mean that a congregation or a denomination or any group effort we participate in has to keep to an incredibly high standard of exact overlap with our own personal beliefs, or else we're very uncomfortable being associated with it. Again, good and ill, curse and blessing with this, but I think it's very prevalent in our tradition. And again, in this way, I think I am very much like my grandfather. While for me, not being conformed to the world looks like honoring one's autonomy to name their gender identity, for example, or marry a partner of any gender, because the world I see has been hostile to that. For him, not being conformed to the world was about plain dress and, holding on to patriarchy and heterosexuality and having more conservative values. I'm not giving much nuance to what he believed here. I'm painting it a very, very broad picture, but because the world that he saw was becoming liberal in ways that were drawing people away from God and community. So being not conformed to the world looked so different to us because how we perceived the world was so different. And who constituted the world? and I think, too, because of at least the Mennonite version of Anabaptism, so created a world in which if you were Mennonite, your world was the church, that I think it became actually not surprising that many of us sort of turned our versions of what nonconforming looked like to our experience of the church community because it was our world in so many ways. I think another commonality between my grandfather and I was we were both willing to be thorns in the flesh of our denominations in terms of making inconvenient stands on controversial issues of our times, although the stands were about as different as they could possibly be. I think there's like a commonality in spirit, if not letter of the law there, that can oddly bind a lot of Mennonites and Anabaptists together, even though it actually looks like they're doing something like very, very different from each other. And all of this drama is probably drama as in like the splitting and the walking away, and is probably one of the reasons that many of the folks who started CMCL called themselves the Lost Sons and Daughters of Menno. I think I have that correct. Is that the phrase? I'm looking at you, Mary Lou and Michael. Okay. Folks deeply formed by Anabaptism, but also concerned that participation in a faith community not be damaging and relationally and emotionally violent to folks who made different choices in good conscience. And there are folks here who could speak for what that phrase meant for them in a way that I'm just giving my own interpretation to. This congregation has also been supremely blessed by the stream of folks who did not grow up with Anabaptism here. And the clear eyes that, I say they simply because I did grow up Mennonite, not because people who didn't grow up Anabaptist aren't a part of the us of the congregation, but But the clear eyes that they have brought to these beliefs that we hold and this tradition that we are constantly interrogating and trying to live out together. And also, I think, helped us disentangle from blind spots and inspired us with the ways that you interpret and adapt Anabaptist theology. So we are a very, very lucky congregation that that we have that diversity of people bringing other histories to this in fresh eyes. And I would like to say to the lost sons and daughters of Menno that your concern and your distance, your critiques, and yet your commitment to this congregation and tradition are a part of this tradition. They are in the stream of it. Especially thinking about that part of our tradition that is about correction, like that is being a part of this tradition, even though it may have felt like being set apart from it. I just want to encourage you to like continue, even if there are parts that you needed to walk away from to protect yourself or to speak to, that that your voices are very needed in the tradition as a whole to continue shaping it as we move forward. And that also you can speak to the tradition with as much authority as anyone. And I think sometimes those of us who've been accused of being on the liberal end of things have felt less authority to speak to the tradition because we've been perceived as people who were departing from it in some way. And I just really think that that correction element is a huge part of our tradition that we are living into, and we have as much voice into the tradition as anyone else. So, and there are complications of a place like Lancaster where Mennonites are everywhere. It can make it harder to see the unique gifts of the tradition when you're surrounded by reminders and remainders of it everywhere. Our tradition's distinctives have value. They have inspired and shaped us, and they are shaping us and inspiring us. And CMCL has maybe been a place more prone to critique than praise, and maybe that's me up here in the pulpit doing more critique than anything. But I also think that that critique or correction is a form of love and ownership of tradition. And that too is part of our DNA. No tradition is perfect, and Christianity in the United States holds an almost untenable diversity of expression right now. And I don't mean to make light of those kinds of differences by using this thread of the story of my grandfather and I, and be like, oh, you can be like radically diametrically opposed and it's all great because we're all the same family. Like, I think it's helpful to look at those things, but I'm also not trying to make light of it. I'd like to think that differences are as simple as, for example, the differences listed in the Romans passage about our different giftings and things like that. But I think significant differences of theological interpretation are more complicated than that and have more weight to them. So we do need to take them seriously and stay in committed conversation that is willing to challenge and critique each other, not just be like, oh, we're different, so you do you and I'll do me. My hope is that we can be a part of using this sense of kinship and common language that has been built over 500 years to speak into today's realities boldly and to stay in the conversation that's currently shaping Christianity, as difficult as that can feel sometimes. Because people's beliefs about God and Christ are profoundly shaping our nation with life and death impact for people. And I think how churches have been naming who God is and how we relate to God and what authority it's profoundly impacting things, and I don't want, I want us to stay in that conversation of mutual critique and correction. I think our voice is as important as anyone's in that. So, and finally, I just wanted to say that I'm grateful to be a part of this tradition, and that there's no way I could even disentangle who I am from being shaped by it. So again, coming back around to this idea of critique and correction, the tradition has shaped me to be the person who feels like I can stand in a community and we can talk together about critiquing it, and that too is a form of love and loyalty, as odd as it may seem. And I'm just so grateful to be in a congregation where we can do that together, and speak to the realities together and look together at what how we're living into our traditions or not, or where they might need to be pushed back on, or where we need to actually step forward in them in ways that we haven't been paying attention to them the way we could be. No tradition is perfect. Again, Anabaptism is just one Christian experiment, but I think we all need a family and a community to stand in, and we can't pretend we don't have a history when we do. So I think the ways that we embrace that and celebrate that and also critique it continue to be really important, and I'm just very grateful for all of you and for the fact that CMCL is a voice in this 500-year tradition.